tired of this music, having a little too much rhyme with no reason, time out of season. This is Chuck D. We're bringing the noise with world beats and issues, a new radio show specifically for the hip-hop fanatic. And you don't stop. It's the issues and inside stories of the hip-hop and rap music planet. And you don't stop. The missing discussions about the music, artists, labels, producers, writers, and fanatics about this thing. So join me, Chuck D, DJ Johnny Juice, Wild Man Steve, and the rest of my radio crew. And you don't stop. Every Monday night for the 2010 World Beats and Issues, 9 to 11 p.m. on WBAI. Get it? World Beats and Issues in New York City, the tri-state area, 99.5 FM. And you don't stop streaming galaxy-wide on WBAI.org.
World Beats and Issues, that's what WBAI stands for. Okay, you're listening to WBAI in New York. It's 7 o'clock time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
Jim.
Hello.
Red Hat.
Hello.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Voltaire.
Insert catchphrase here.
Don't be a wise guy, Voltaire. Nobody likes that. And down in Philadelphia is Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Bernie, you're particularly low tonight. Are you using your Sprint PCS phone?
I am, but I'm also trying not to cough because I breathe in way too much smog. Beijing, and my voice is weak.
Yeah, but you've been back from Beijing for a while now.
2 weeks, but I still have this nasty cough. Don't breathe. If you ever go to China, don't breathe the air there. Really bad.
Have you tried standing on your head and seeing if it'll come out?
No, I haven't. That's a good idea.
Yeah, why don't you do the show that way, Bernie? And yeah, it's interesting. So maybe you have swine flu. Is that possible? We were jotting down a number of people we know who have swine flu.
I don't dig on swine, but
yeah,
that's
well,
okay.
Actually, we're not even supposed to call it that. We're supposed to call it H1N1.
Right.
Out of deference to the swine.
You know, when I landed in Shanghai, the Chinese police had these infrared cameras pointed at everybody getting off the plane. As soon as you get off the plane, you get off the jetway thing or whatever, they had these cameras pointed at everybody's face that you walked by, and it detected whether you had a fever. And if you did, they'd pull you away and put you in quarantine right away. Apparently, nobody on... At least my part of the line was quarantined, but it was very eerie.
Is that what happened to Mayor Ray Nagin from New Orleans? He was quarantined in China. I think maybe he was just on a plane with somebody else who had it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
This sounds a lot more rigorous than the procedure I was subjected to in Morocco this summer, which is they fill out a form, and you fill out a form, are you sick, yes, no, and then you hand it to a nurse who looks at you and decides you're not really sick and lets you in.
I see. How did you fill out your form?
I said, no, I'm not sick.
Okay.
As opposed to the system in the U.S. where you fill out a form that says, are you sick, yes or no, and they just look at the form.
Well,
I'm not even aware of that.
I have to say that would be about as rigorous a system as the inspection I got.
Okay, well, anyway, getting to real news tonight. Okay, Facebook in the news again, but this time it's an interesting story having to do with this guy who got snagged for a robbery somewhere uptown, and basically this is the first time I think this has happened where Facebook has been used before, MySpace has been used before to catch people at crimes because they say no, I didn't commit the crime, but yet their Facebook page is boasting about the crime. In this particular case, this guy Rodney Bradford was picked up for a robbery. And turns out that he had just updated his Facebook page at the very time of the robbery. He was in Harlem visiting his father at the time, which is a claim supported by his father and his stepmother. Now, the prosecutor in this case said that in principle, anyone who knew Mr. Bradford's username and password could have typed the Facebook update, but he regards it as unlikely in this case. Actually, that's his lawyer saying that. This implies a level of criminal genius that you would not expect from a young boy like this. He is not Dr. Evil. He added that the Facebook entry was just the icing on the cake since his client had other alibis. And basically, the Brooklyn District Attorney, I guess the robbery took place in Brooklyn. He was in the Bronx. Okay, so
he was in Harlem.
He was in Harlem. Okay.
But alleged to be robbing someone in Brooklyn.
The robbery took place in Brooklyn.
Hard to do.
All right. Yeah, you can't be in two places at once. So the Brooklyn District Attorney said the prosecution contacted Facebook. We were told of this alibi. We contacted people, researched, and discovered that it was accurate. But this guy, Joseph Polini, who teaches in the Department of Law, Police Science, and Criminal Justice Administration, the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, which I believe is also in Brooklyn, said prosecutors should not have been so quick to drop the charges. With a username and password, anyone can input data in a Facebook page. Some of the brightest people on the internet are teenagers. They know the internet better than a lot of people. Why? Because they use it all the time. So, folks, remember, if you use the internet all the time, you'll get really good at it. So they could develop an alibi, he continued. They watch television, the movies. There is a multitude of reasons why someone of that age would have the knowledge to do a crime like that. It has to be someone of that age. I mean, that's a really weird statement. But the attorney said the DA did a good job. She wasn't out collecting trophies. She worked overtime to ascertain the truth. Now, Mr. Bradford, who has stayed in Harlem with his father since the case was dismissed, said he is thinking about hanging out with a different crowd and going back to school to become an electrician. His friends, though, have taken to calling him the Facebook kid. It doesn't say anywhere in this article from the New York Times why they picked him up in the first place, how they how the geniuses in the NYPD figured out it was allegedly him.
He was black.
Well, you know what? There's lots of black people that they could have pinned it on, so I don't know if that's going to be the excuse they use. Yeah, it's well, now Rapti Firefly, you looked into this story a little bit, and I think you actually have the status update that this guy used that proved his innocence?
Yes, the status update in question, the Times and some other news outlets have been vague about it, just saying it was something involving pancakes.
Well, according to the New York Times, it says, "Where's my pancakes?" was the phrase. But you did some research and discovered it was something
that's
else.
That's not quite accurate. People out there have zoomed in on a screenshot of the Facebook and checked his actual Facebook and found out that the actual update in question, the one that determined the course of criminal proceedings against him, actually read, and I quote, "On the phone with this fat chick, where are my IHOP?" And
where are my IHOP?
Where are, one word, W-H-E-R-E-R, my IHOP.
Uh-huh.
And how would you like that to be the sentence that determines the course of your criminal trial?
That could be a very important sentence in his in his life, Alter.
All right, well, in a more serious note, the article from the New York Times pretty inaccurate because not inaccurate per se, but they kind of let the that professor from John Jay College get away with saying that anybody could have faked this. But the point of the story was that it wasn't the login information that they used to prove his innocence.
Right.
It was the IP address.
Exactly.
They don't mention that anywhere in the New York Times.
Yeah, they don't mention it in the article. And you know, obviously, yeah, if you're just relying on the username and password, anybody could do that.
But
sure.
You can't fake an IP address like that.
You can fake it, but you'd have to really be Dr. Evil to be able to do that.
I think this is at least the second time we've heard about technology and the tracking that is there, whether or not we know it, actually getting someone off the hook. I mean,
are you trying
I'm
to
sure
make a joke?
Happens.
Is that what you're doing?
No, that was all completely right. Unintentional. But the first time we heard about this was somebody who was acquitted because their MetroCard logs, they had an element of MetroCard prove that they were in a different place at the time the crime was committed. And now this is, someone's internet activity is being used. And I think that's interesting. And it's also interesting to see when it'll be used for the inverse. I mean, it is used for the inverse all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to see it come to some good for once.
But something like a MetroCard, there's other data to back it up. There's cameras in the stations. There's cameras at MetroCard machines. You can track down the card in question and see, you know, who bought it and so on. But in this case, I'm wondering why they didn't let the proceedings go on and actually subpoena the quote-unquote fat chick in question.
Yeah, who was that exactly, and what was going on there? And will she provide an alibi? Maybe she'll just be very upset at being referred to in that manner.
Well, also, this may not have been the only reason they dropped the charges. Again, they said that he had other alibis,
right.
So he had his parents, and probably maybe they did talk to whoever he was on the phone with.
Again, so. I'd like to know what made them think it was him in the first place, right. And I don't know.
They may have had some reason.
Yeah,
it may have not been a very good one. But,
well, it could have been. I mean, as you said, he wanted to hang out with different people. It could have been the connections. Maybe some other people he knew were connected to the crime.
Yeah, maybe someone pinned it on him. That's true. We can only speculate.
Yep.
Maybe it was IHOP.
Is there an IHOP anywhere in that area? I thought IHOP wasn't around this.
I think there's IHOP farther up, maybe
in
the Bronx.
Okay, well, I've learned something then, because I didn't think there were any in Manhattan.
I don't know. I think there might be in the Bronx.
Maybe this is all a viral marketing ploy by IHOP to get interest in the brand.
Well, I'm pretty interested in that. Okay, and of course, we've all heard the story about the dictionary word of the year. What is it? Who knows?
Oh, unfriend.
There you go. You got it right away.
Yeah.
You really study this. Yes, the new Oxford American Dictionary word of the year is unfriend. I thought the proper use was defriend. I thought you defriended somebody.
But
unfriend
when people,
somebody?
When people talk about it, especially in terms of, I would assume, Facebook, they say, I unfriended that person.
Okay. Unfriend beat out a tech-heavy field that included netbook, hashtag, and sexting to take the annual honor. What do you hand me this phone for, Mike?
It has a map on it.
What do I need to look at a map when I'm on the where things are? What am I looking at?
IHOP.
I see Central Park. Oh, an IHOP. Is that what you looked up? Okay.
There you go. Uptown.
You like your new phone, Mike? Because you keep handing me your phone, showing me things. You have one of the Droid phones, right?
Yeah.
You actually switched to Verizon to get a Droid phone.
That's true.
Yeah. Do you recommend people do that?
If they want to.
Okay.
I have no specific problem with it. But I'm not gonna tell everyone that they should switch.
All right.
I think in terms you mentioned it might be unfriend or defriend. I think in terms of the etymology, it's probably because generally when you add somebody as a friend, the verb that's used commonly nowadays is to friend somebody. And like much like you would do something or undo it, you would friend someone or unfriend them. So that's probably where that came from.
I don't quite understand why Facebook is getting all the credit, though. I'm pretty sure that some of us were unfriending people on LiveJournal 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. So.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Maybe some of us unfriended people in real life.
That
really,
too.
Really ahead of the curve here. Boy, this is a big article about this. They sure do. They talk about all the words. A hashtag is the symbol, looks like a pound sign used on Twitter posts to allow them to be found more easily by other users. A netbook is a small portable laptop, and sexting is the act of sending sexually explicit texts or photos on a mobile phone. Other tech-related finalists this year, and I've never heard this one, were paywall. Paywall?
What?
Has anybody heard it? No? He's never heard that, Jim? You know this, Voltaire?
That's what the Wall Street Journal has done in the past and what Rupert Murdoch is claiming to want to do with everything, where he'll charge money to read an article.
A way of blocking parts of a website to all but paying customers. Very good. Okay, then maybe you can tell us what intoxicated means.
Texting while drunk.
Yeah, I would assume.
You know, I very well might. The state of being distracted while driving because of sending a text message. But, you know, we've talked about that subject many times. We've never come across the word intoxicated before.
I think they made that one up.
Yeah. I think so, too.
It makes me think of Texas.
Okay. The economy provided Zombie Bank, a financial institution still operating, even though its liabilities are greater than its assets. And politics brought us Birther, which Oxford describes as a conspiracy theorist who challenges President Obama's U.S. birth certificate. I've heard that. I've heard that used. I didn't know what people were talking about, but now it makes sense. Birther.
And they're not going to mention teabagger?
No, I don't think that's in here.
It's not on that list on the wall, so
I think that's already in certain dictionaries.
It is in certain dictionaries, but not for the reasons that you're bringing up. Let's see. Debate about the decision was ongoing on blogs as recently as yesterday. Yes, that's true. Chief among the issues of dispute, whether unfriend or defriend was the proper word. Wow, I'm right in tune with them for weeding somebody out from one's online circle. Frustrated that unfriend is the word of the year, it's definitely defriend when referencing Facebook. One Twitter user wrote adding the hashtag. Come on, Mike, you can get this one. What's the hashtag going to be?
Something fail, Oxford fail?
Dictionary fail.
Yeah, that was close.
Others defended the choice. Defriend makes me think of defoliate and, well, I don't know, it sounds weird, one wrote. You know what? I'm not going to spend any more time on this. I'm sorry. We spent too much time on it already, but it is kind of funny. Bernie, any thoughts from down south?
I have never been defriended because I have never joined Facebook. So that's how I avoid being defriended.
Well, Bernie, you realize that if you don't join Facebook, someone else can join Facebook and say they're you. And what are you going to do about that?
Well, they probably already have.
Well, they haven't tried to friend me yet.
Facebook will probably reject him with a one-letter last name.
Bernie S?
Yeah, they won't think that's his real name.
That's true.
Hmm.
Well, we'll have to find out.
Maybe I could spell it phonetically.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
You know, I actually found something interesting in terms of Facebook rejecting people. I had to make a test account. Uh-huh. And if you try to use test as one of the names,
right.
They won't let that through. Well, so I if couldn't... your real name is test,
right.
You're going to have to contact them.
I couldn't use, you know how you can use nicknames in Facebook?
Yeah.
I couldn't use hacker or any derivative of hacker, and they weren't being used by anybody else. They blocked the word hacker. Mm. I think what I finally wound up using was something ridiculously long, like why can't my username be hacker? Mm. At Facebook, which is silly, but you can't use things like a hacker 2600 or, you know, somebody the hacker or anything like that. It just doesn't work.
A real name, though. Didn't we have a major hacking Beyond Hope conference?
Beyond Hope.
And his name was Hacking.
His name was Hacking, and there are people whose last name is Hacker, too. So, yeah, it's entirely possible. We could start a class action suit, I suppose. We'll put that on the list of things to do. Okay, now, speaking of Verizon, there's all kinds of talk about them because of the new phones that they introduced recently. This listener writes in, named Cass, writes in asking a couple of questions. Verizon recently introduced Fios in our area. Yesterday, a man showed up at my door and tried to convince me to subscribe to the service. I told him I have Comcast and that they have a promotional rate. He agreed that it is lower than that offered by Verizon. After he left, I got a mysterious phone call, supposedly from Comcast. The woman on the phone told me that my promotional Comcast rate expires in 30 days, and then my monthly rate will go up to $109. When I asked her for a breakdown of this rate, she did not know the details. After I told her that with such an increase, I will probably cancel Comcast service, she told me to call Comcast business office. I then called Comcast and found out that what this woman told me was a pack of lies. My promotional rate still has several months to run, and even if it expires, the regular rate for my service would be $55 a month. The call sounded like a scam from Verizon to scare Comcast customers into signing up for Fios. Would they really stoop to this level?
Well, either that or someone's trying to, I mean, they could have sent someone to the door, find out what they have, and then uh-huh. call them and try to, I mean, well, right, you have a phone book, you have an address in there.
But
and
that
you
person could, represented Verizon when
maybe,
they came to
or
the
they
door.
Had a Verizon shirt on.
So what would be in it for that person to come to your door with a fake Verizon identification and try to get you to sign up for Verizon unless you were working for Verizon? Is there any reason why somebody would do that? Go ahead,
Emmanuel. My guess is that Verizon has a bunch of so-called independent contractors working for them, basically freelance salespeople
mm-hmm.
that are going around knocking on doors, and they get a flat fee for everybody they sign up for Fios. And these, I imagine that some of these freelance piecework independent salespeople are kind of scurrilous and unethical, and maybe trying to boost their sales rate by scaring people.
You know, Bernie, just like private contractors over in Iraq represent the United States, people who work for Verizon, whether they're independent or not, they represent Verizon. So I don't think they can get away with it by blaming it on some independent people. They're supposed to check these guys out. They're supposed to be somewhat reputable. They're wearing the Verizon shirt, so they work for Verizon.
Well, yeah, but maybe Verizon doesn't know this is happening. So, I mean, the person who emailed this, I suggested that he contact Verizon and say, hey, this is what happened. You might want to check that out, because Verizon will have records of which sales guy was in that particular area, whatever. You know, Verizon can't be a mind reader and know everything going on. Not that I generally stand up for telephone companies, but in this case, Verizon might not know its independent contractor is being unethical, but if they knew, they probably would get rid of them.
I think they kind of do that, it's semi-intentionally. They'll say that. It's kind of like Steve Brownbaum talks about with government outsourcing database and stuff to private institutions. They're not like saying, okay, you go out, you have free reign to abuse this, but they're kind of like, giving a blinding approval, I guess.
Well, it's also the case that if this did happen, it happened by way of a phone call. So there's no way to even prove that the person lying had any connection to Verizon. But there's evidence that, well, this person was just at my door. You know, circumstantial evidence, and now I'm getting this phone call based on the same thing. It's kind of weird. Also, you know, I've had the Cablevision 3-for-1 deal. That's where you get connectivity and television and telephone service for one price, and it lasts for a year. I got mail from Verizon, and they knew that it was expiring soon. How do they know this? How are they tapping into to Cablevision's billing records and knowing these things?
I bought it from a third-party vendor, which buys it from Cablevision under some excuse and probably sells Verizon's information to Comcast
well,
as well.
Why is there a third-party vendor with this information?
Because we have no data privacy protection in this country.
Speaking of privacy being dead, I don't know if anybody caught, Steve Rambam was on CNN this week. Our good friend who speaks at Hope had a nice feature piece about how people can have all kinds of information about them out there on the internet if they're not careful, and most people are not very careful. Now, something else involving Verizon, and I learned this by looking at some news stories. And Mike, tell me if you ever have this problem. Anyone else use Verizon here? Verizon Wireless? Nobody else? Oh, you do.
In the past.
Okay. Did you ever have a mysterious data charge just show up, $1.99 on your bill? Apparently, it's very easy to hit a button that's next to the talk button. And if you hit the button, just apparently hitting it on certain phones, right away it starts a data connection. And if you hang up immediately, you still get charged $1.99. It's never happened to me. My ancient phone apparently doesn't have that feature or bug. But I've read so many comments from people saying, yes, this is legendary with Verizon. And apparently many, many people get bilked into paying for things that they didn't want just by hitting the wrong key.
Yeah, I think the Senate is opening an inquiry into this.
Oh, as well they should. Okay, and we had another letter from a listener named Tony. And I believe, Bernie, you had some suggestions for this. He wanted to know, is there a way to interface data from an old word processor to a computer? And is there a device that can transpose vocal dictation to written words? Any advice on this?
Yeah, I suggested to the guy. Yeah, I think he's probably talking about, there were back in the 80s and early 90s, maybe mid 90s, there were dedicated word processor machines out there. They kind of looked like a PC. They had a cathode ray tube or an LCD screen. Some of them used diskettes. Some of them used like really weird non-standard type diskettes. Panasonic sold a lot of them, but there were some other companies too. I know someone who wrote a book on theirs, and they needed to translate, you know, transfer it over to a PC format. And I had to track down. There are companies out there that will take these non-standard diskette formats and convert them to something that's readable on a PC file, and they'll email it to you. There's also some free software out there you could probably find online if you look that will convert these file formats. But it's tricky, and it's one of the concerns that I have about all these aging media formats. There's a lot of, like if this person apparently wrote a book and it's on some format that they can't get it off, sometimes you can just get locked into that format and never get your data out again if your machine dies. So we're going to run into this more and more, I think, as information on floppy disks or even CDs become obsolete. The data will just no longer be readable, or it may just expire, unlike a printed paper, which lasts, you know, for centuries.
Very true, so, very true. I mean, there are books that are around from the 1700s. So you can, you know, it's not a good idea to carry them around with you on the subway, but you can still look at them. I hesitate to think what a floppy disk from that long ago would look like after that much time.
So I'm hoping this guy can find someone that will translate his data. His other question, is there anything that will transcribe voice into text? And there are some programs out there, like Dragon is one company. There's other companies out there that sell that. But I don't think any of them are ready for prime time yet. I think the error rate is too high, and you still have to go back and correct all the errors. So we're not quite to Star Trek yet where everything is perfect.
There's an additional risk as more and more people are storing their data not on their own media at all, but on servers controlled by companies that they have no long-term contract with. And there's a real risk that if you have your data with Company X and Company X goes out of business, there's no guarantee of what will happen to your data.
There are so many ways to lose data. It's incredible. Even things that I thought were important a decade or so ago, I had a hell of a time trying to find copies on my own computer system. And, you know, I thought I had saved it someplace. But eventually I wound up finding a copy on someone else's computer system. And that was a backup file of something. It was incredible how the things that you think are important wind up being the first things to go. And of course, you wind up with a lot of nonsense that you don't need. But formats change. Things go bad. Hard drives get lost. It's all kinds of things that can happen. And we might think that by digitizing things, we're saving them for forever. Many times we're saving them for a lesser period of time than ever before.
Yeah, I was very lucky because when I came back to the States, we had a robbery or a burglary in our apartment. And I had my laptop, or my old laptop, that was stolen, along with the backup hard drive that was sitting next to it.
Nice. So you keep the backup right next to the computer.
Well, I did. I don't anymore. And I was very lucky in that a few months earlier, I had actually upgraded the hard drive of that laptop. Mm-hmm. So I still had the old hard drive with most everything up until, you know, a few months earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But were it not for that, I would have lost pretty much every photo I'd taken since 2003.
Yeah.
And so that would have been an incredible loss. Obviously, now I keep my backup in a different place, but that just kind of hit home. I'd never really thought about that before.
You should keep your backup in a different state. It should not be in this, because if a city gets nuked, all right, you're going to lose everything.
If the city gets nuked, I'm probably not going to care much about my data.
Well, I mean, that's rather pretentious to say that you're the one that's going to decide if your data is important. I think the rest of humanity should be, you know, should have.
Well,
that,
my only
that
other option then is to store the data in the cloud somewhere.
There you go.
Whether or not I trust the cloud.
Yeah, it's a question of security versus security of privacy, rather, and saving your data.
I mean, obviously there are ways to store your data in other places on the internet, as long as you keep it encrypted in a way in which nobody else will be able to read it, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of people who know how to do that is extremely small.
Well, I'm not saying that other people would do that, but I'm saying that I could do that if I was concerned.
Mm-hmm. There's also upgrades to certain programs. I had an AVI file. I was able to look at my old PC, my old ancient PC from 7 years ago. And I tried to play it the other day. It doesn't play anymore, even though it's, you know, the same program supposedly is called up. It's incompatible. And there are other instances where an upgrade will make something just look worse. So you have to keep changing your parameters. Otherwise, you just might wind up completely incompatible with the future. It's kind of sad.
Try VLC. It plays everything.
I did try VLC,
it
did not work.
Huh.
Yeah,
it did not work.
Said this is incompatible format. And there's all kinds of things. I mean, this is a nightmare scenario that happens to everybody at some point. So you just, I guess, store things in as many different formats as you can, or just keep checking to make sure that it doesn't go bad, or give up, yeah. Or just go analog. Yeah, okay.
What?
You're going to store your files on, what, cassette tapes?
Well, no, I mean, you know, maybe print out your pictures, have photo albums like people used to do.
Because people never lose paper.
Well, I mean, it's just one other way of backing things
up.
Well,
I mean, you know, photo albums are a good idea, at least for me, in terms of photos, right? Because then, worst case, I have at least the best photos I've ever taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I lose my printed photos way more easily
than I lose my
photos.
That's why you have to put
them in a book. Okay, but if I hold a magnet up to your printed photos, nothing's going to happen to them, all right? Whereas in 1 second, I could wipe out everything of yours. And,
but if you hold up a magnifying glass to the printed photos, then it's not going to help.
No. Well, it's not going to hurt. Well, you mean if the sun is shining down on it?
Well, yeah, but...
You left out that part of it.
But if you did that to a computer, it wouldn't harm it at all, so...
Well, no, I think it might if you had a brilliant beam of heat hitting your computer. Well, you know what? There's all kinds of ways we can destroy things. I'm sure we can go into more detail.
What's the lasers and sharks? What if we have that too, all our data is gone.
Yeah,
but
I think the point we're trying to make here is that if you just back up things in different formats in different parts of the planet, then you should be okay. But eventually, everything is going to be destroyed. So I guess we have to, you know, deal with that fact.
Well, how long does your data really have to last? Longer than you?
Yeah. Mm. Well, I just like for it to be around as long as I need it, and so that, you know, I can look up something that happened in my past and know, yeah, that actually did happen, rather than have to like say, you know, what in the world was that? What happened? Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
I just want to say that some of the oldest photographs in existence, I mean, from the dawn of early photography, have survived. And, you know, sometimes the people who took those photographs, which have amazing historical value, never really considered that they would be all that important.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really wondering about, you know, some of the wonderful photographs that are taken today, whether they really will be around 100 or 150 years from now or longer. It's really a blip in the...
And whether they should be. I mean, people are taking so many more photographs now that there are so many lousy photographs out there. I mean, keep in mind the way it used to be. You used to have a roll of 12 or 24 or maybe 36 exposures on a roll of film, and now you have thousands and thousands on your digital camera. So people are just taking all kinds of pictures, and believe it or not, most of them really are terrible. So how many pictures do we want to wade through in the centuries ahead?
But then on the other end of the spectrum, you have a lot of pictures that are also, you know, put online. So say on Flickr, you've got all these stunning photos. And to go back to what Mike said, we don't know that that'll be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just GeoCities closed down, a month ago? And I'm not saying that that was a fantastic service, but it was a service that was really big 10
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Right.
And now 10 years later, it's obsolete. And it's gone.
But our friend Jason Sky wound up preserving most of it,
well,
along with some other people.
Sure, but these things disappear when whether or not you think they will.
Yeah, no, that's true. And that's why you should never store things, you know, primarily on someone else's site, because, they can definitely go away.
I just wanted to point out that it is entirely possible to take awful photographs with analog film as
well. Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But with less of them, less of them to worry about, it's easier to find the good
ones. It's only because they cost more money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not even convinced that the percentage of bad photos has gone up.
I think it stayed the same, but I think it probably has gone up because people are just taking more photos because there's no cost anymore.
Right, you take five photos of the same thing just to make sure that one of them turns out okay.
Exactly, and you post all of them.
But with film, you don't even know if it turned out okay. With digital camera, at least you can stop when it finally does.
The Polaroid camera that you do. Yeah, get one of those.
Yeah, Polaroid, shake it for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, here's something that's of interest to some of our listeners. Halifax customers have been hit by a power failure affecting all branches, cash machines, and online banking. What is Halifax, you might ask? Well, Halifax is not a city. Well, it is
yes,
a city.
It is.
But not in this context. It's a bank, and it's a bank over in the UK. Halifax and Bank of Scotland services were disrupted by an external power failure at an IT center in Yorkshire, causing all kinds of issues. Power, of course, has been restored, but while it was going on, nobody was able to take any money out. The cash machines were out of service. Customers had their cards rejected by other cash machines. And basically, people had to greet people at the bank and tell them that all banking services are down and keep them out of the building. This story coming from the BBC basically says that customers were allowed to withdraw a maximum of £200 because the bank could not check their account balance. So if the bank can check your account balance, you can take out up to about $400, according to this. And I guess if you can get the ATM to work in the first place, that's something. I know when I used to use ATMs back in the early days, they would go down for maintenance. The 24-hour machines were actually 23-hour machines. And it would go down for maintenance 1 hour a day. And if you went to a different bank that was networked into yours, you could take out money even if you didn't have it because there was no way of checking. I think they've progressed beyond that point. I think they actually are able to check all the time now. But
not
I don't know.
If it breaks.
If it breaks, yeah.
I don't think it goes down for a scheduled hour a day, but sometimes it goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get money you don't have.
Yeah, that's true. It does happen.
They find out and you have to give the money back, but
eventually. Okay, here's an interesting story that is one of the crazy ones that we get occasionally. The headline, Chinese woman offers to steal virtual vegetables for son. Yeah, I couldn't make this up if I tried. A woman in China has agreed to steal vegetables for her son if he performed well at school. Not real, but playing an online game that requires people to steal and sell vegetables. That's according to a media report. This comes from Indo-Asian News Service.
Wait, so stealing vegetables is an allowed part of the game?
Apparently.
So she's just saying, if you go spend 2 hours studying, I'll spend 2 hours playing the game for you?
This woman made a deal with her son. His son, first of all, is a third grade high school student. Which is it? I don't know. I don't know how it works.
The third year of high school.
Is that what it is? Okay. Well, you'd think that if he was in third grade, maybe this would make a little bit more sense of playing this kind of game. After finding out he was spending most of his time playing an online game, which requires players to plant, steal, and sell vegetables, the woman said she would help her son in the game if he spent at least 2 hours a day studying after school hours. How did this get to be a news story? That's what I'd like to know. Who reported it in the first place?
What I want to know is how did games become something that is a drag to do and that you get other people to do for you? I was under the impression that you played a game to relax, to have fun.
Yeah, but the game meant a lot to him, but he was failing his classes. So in order to keep the game going, she offered to do that for him, you see. And it was,
I think what Rob is saying is that this game sounds terrible.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a good plan for parents to get their kids to eat vegetables.
Yeah, but they're fake. They're virtual vegetables,
so,
and
they still get the nutrients.
Yeah, you can get prosecuted for virtual stealing. So I don't know. Maybe
I'm a virtual vegetarian.
Yeah, what exactly does that mean?
It means you don't eat orcs. I don't know.
Okay. Now here's something. We're going to take phone calls too. We're about ready for that. 212-209-2900. If you have any stories or questions or things that you'd like to share with us, but here's a question about an escape in a prison using an unlikely method. This guy escaped from the Bibb County Jail on Saturday night, and I'm sorry, I think that's in Georgia, I think, but does it really matter where it is? He was recaptured, so there's no need to panic, but basically he used a flip-flop, a flip-flop being a sandal. Yeah, he was able to actually use unlock the cell door and use his sandal to jimmy it open, I suppose. And I never would have thought to do that. I never would have thought that that was something, a way to get out of prison. I don't know. Walter, you would have thought of this?
Well, we have flip-flop lock-picking panels in Hope.
Well, I imagine this just goes to show that anything is possible if you just put your mind to it. But, yeah, that's they say the lock was defective. They say the lock was defective on the cell, and it's been repaired. But who knows how many other locks can be opened with flip-flops. Yes, Bernie?
I can see how that's possible, having examined the locking mechanism on prison doors before.
Did you try to escape?
No, I never tried to escape, but I was highly observant. You know, when you're locked in a cage for a long time, month after month, you tend to want to be really observant of all this stuff because your brain just has to be active. So you're thinking about, you think about escaping a lot, but you know if you do, you're going to get shot, so it's not worth it. But it doesn't stop you from thinking about it and planning it and, you know, you just don't tell anybody about what you're thinking about or...
Well, wait, is it illegal to think about it? If you told somebody, I'm thinking about escaping, could you get charged with a crime?
Probably, but I
would. What would the crime be? Thought crime? I mean, have we really reached that stage yet?
They'd probably throw you in solitary confinement or worse.
Okay, but they're throwing you in solitary confinement for a reason, and the reason being that you thought of something you shouldn't think of. It's just interesting. I'm not suggesting people confess to thinking about things they shouldn't think about, but...
I'm thinking that this is really enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. Okay, and we have this sad news. A free service enjoyed by hundreds has been shut down due to illegal activity conducted by one individual. Yes, we're talking about the free Wi-Fi service where is this place? It doesn't say where this is. Coshocton County. I really should write down the states these things come from, but apparently they had free Wi-Fi. The county had a free wireless internet connection available in the block surrounding the courthouse, which I guess is convenient for prosecuting people. It was disabled last week after someone used the wireless local area network address to illegally download a movie.
That's the crime.
The county's internet service provider, One Community, was notified by Sony Pictures Entertainment about the breach, and the county's information technology department was in turn notified by One Community, and that was their reaction to just cut it off to everybody. Yeah,
I really hope nobody in this town ever commits a capital crime that gets them in a death penalty, because then they'll have to kill the entire town.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's a precedent that's being set here. So you said it was Ohio, Bernie.
Yes, Coshocton, Ohio.
Okay.
Well, not too far from Dayton, and there's just weird things that go on there.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, we're open for people's phone calls if anybody wants to call in, ask us some questions, or give us some stories of their own. Feel free, 212-209-2900. And we have a phone call over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
How you doing? I want to thank you for answering my letter, man. I'm Tony.
Oh, and you're Tony. You're the guy who asked about the data from an old word processor. Okay.
Yeah. I also just want you to know that there's an IHOP on 135th and out of Clayton Powell Boulevard.
Okay. Well, now we know that, too. Wow.
Okay.
Our listeners have all kinds of information for us.
Yeah. Thanks again, man.
All right. Thanks.
Take it easy.
212-209-2900. Now we know that.
That's what it showed you on the map.
Yeah. Well, you know, you showed me this little tiny phone while I'm talking on the radio. It's hard to understand what exactly is relevant there. But, yeah, that's good.
Pancakes are always relevant.
They are. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Speak good up. Evening, Emmanuel. This is Bobson from Bulgaria.
Bulgaria. How you doing?
All right. Greetings also from the IRC channel dedicated to the show.
The Off the Hook IRC
out there tonight.
The Off the Hook IRC channel on irc.2600.net. Yes, people are welcome to join that. So what's going on in Bulgaria tonight?
Well, it's kind of late for anything to be going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that's true. It must be about, what, 2 in the morning there?
2:38 a.m.
Uh-huh. Okay, all right. So you're listening to us over the internet, obviously, because I don't think our signal gets out that far.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And I imagine we're coming in loud and clear.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything going on technology-wise, phone-wise, computer-wise over there?
Well, I can't think of anything right now. We had the mayoral election on Sunday. We had a new elected mayor person. I don't know what she's going to be doing later.
Okay.
When she gets.
Well, let me ask you a question then about things over there. Do you have Wi-Fi? Do you have free Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi of any sort in the streets of are you in Sofia?
There are, yes, I am in Sofia, and there are places where you can get it.
And it's free of charge?
In some parks, yes, some of it.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's broadband Wi-Fi. It's bearable.
Uh-huh. Well, that's something. That's good. That's good to know. Because when I was in Belarus, it's illegal to have Wi-Fi there. So some countries have...
Why would it be illegal?
Well, they want to control the what people are reading and doing. Remember, Belarus, the last dictatorship of Europe.
There could be other reasons too, Emmanuel.
Well, yeah, that's the stated reason. That's what people believe that...
No, the frequency allocated, the 2.4 gigahertz frequencies could be used by other services in some countries. That not all countries participated in the agreeing that this frequency band will be used for Wi-Fi, and it could be used for police communications or something.
Okay,
so
in this case, there would be police communications if you were using Wi-Fi in Belarus because it is against the law. There's no question about that. Anyway.
There was a story on a popular online comic strip about microwave phones being used to damage Wi-Fi connections for whatnot.
Interesting. All right, listen, we're gonna move on, but it's good hearing from you again, and hopefully we'll see you at one of the conferences we wind up going to, or there'll be a conference in Bulgaria sometime.
Maybe whenever I get the budget worked out for one of those.
Okay. All right. Always good hearing from people far away, and Bulgaria, no exception. If you're in a faraway country, give us a call. Country code 1-212-209-2900. You know, years ago, it would have been unfathomable for us to receive a phone call all the way from the other side of the world from somebody listening to us live.
I would have been curious to know whether he was calling us on a landline or via Skype or something. It sounded kind of like digitized connection.
I think he was using the internet to call. I mean, it didn't sound like a normal phone.
Right.
Connection. All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that Pete Seeger used to sing the song about the prisoner who escaped from prison wearing flip-flops, and the song went like this. He's Long John, long time a-coming, like a turkey through the corn with his long clothes on. He's Long John. Now, John had a pair of shoes, funniest shoes you ever did see. Had a heel in the front and a heel in the back, and no one knew where John had gone. Okay?
Wow. Okay. Well, our listeners are certainly giving us all the information we need tonight, but thanks for sharing that with
us. Well, I thought you'd, you know...
If you
need to know about flip-flops, before flip-flops came around, when the Japanese started making them, I saw the same sort of thing made by rubber tires for shoes in Mexico. And I thought, wow, that's the way to make shoes for children, because they were walking around barefoot all over the world, in Africa and Asia and stuff, and they were getting parasites. And with anything covering their feet, that doesn't happen. The Japanese came along and made $1 flip-flops, and that ended parasites. Wow.
Okay, well, thanks for that information.
Right, that little technology.
Yeah, very, very fascinating. Right. Okay, we're going to move on. Thanks again for that call. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up. Go ahead.
Hey, Emmanuel.
Hey, what's on your mind? Where are you calling from?
Calling from Brooklyn, and you mentioned earlier... You've mentioned the ban on Wi-Fi in Belarus.
Yes, I did.
Well, I heard something really weird happening in Ukraine that kind of reminded me. They're trying to bring something called the Law 404, which basically requires the ISPs to monitor all communications and search for child pornography.
Okay.
And, you know, when I saw this, I kind of got concerned that, you know, There's really much concern going on about that this will be used to basically illegally spy on people.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a concern. Absolutely.
Well, that's more or less all of it. So there's really lots of happening online with those keywords, law 404 in Ukraine or something like that. So if you guys, if this is interesting, you might look it up.
Okay, and our sympathies, of course, to the Ukraine for being eliminated from the World Cup today, but that's just the way things go. Go ahead, Voltaire.
Yeah, it sounds like an important issue that we don't hear enough about. Like, we hear similar laws happening in Western Europe and North America or Australia, but never we always tend to think of or forget about Eastern Europe and think of it as Russia, but it just like...
Speak for yourself.
Just like in authoritarian regimes, but in fact, Ukraine has, like, the two-party system and everything, and they're kind of a active... political class. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, six more phone calls. Good evening. You are on Off the Hook. Go ahead, wherever you are.
Yeah.
You guys got a lot closer to the phone than that.
Okay, thank you. I have a problem that's plaguing me. I'm hoping you guys can give me some insight.
Okay, well, hopefully you're landing on Earth soon so that we can hear you better. What kind of phone are you using?
Okay, here. Maybe that's better.
It is better. All right.
Okay, I have a DSL service.
Our sympathies.
From Verizon, even more sympathies.
All right, yes,
I'm definitely. I'm way out from the CO,
mm-hmm.
and whenever it rains, I get the noise, you know, impulse, steady state, and I'm wondering if you can give me any tips on how I can go about getting Verizon to solve this problem.
You say when it rains, your service...
The cables, the copper cables between the CO and my home mm-hmm. go noisy.
Yeah. The only way to really, I think, get this fixed, I have the same problem with a landline where every time it rains, I get a loud hum on it. The only way to really fix that is to every single time it happens, report it. Just be a real pain in the ass and just report it over and over again. And eventually it's going to get somebody's attention to the degree where they're going to make it their mission to just stop you from calling all the time. And they're either going to cut you off or actually fix your service. Mike, you disagree with that?
Don't be so confident. I used to work in Lower Manhattan in a very, you know, area where you'd think things would work. And we had an expensive business class data service that would go out every time it rained. And it was a sufficiently expensive service that they were supposed to actually fix it when we called to complain. But what they would do is we'd call, say, our service is down. And they'd come the next day when it wasn't raining anymore, so the service would work again. And they'd say, oh, we fixed it. And this went on for months and years until we finally used something that didn't have wires at all.
Yeah, actually, the building that I work in now, the only option there is Verizon DSL. At the moment, they're changing that. And, you know, the reason they're changing that is because everybody in the building said it's too slow, it's too slow, it's too slow. It doesn't work. And Verizon wouldn't do anything about it. So finally, the building itself is just getting another, you know, ISP. Mm-hmm. I guess they're going to run a fiber line or something to get us connected. But, you know, it doesn't matter to them. They have enough subscribers that they don't really want to fix people.
Well, if they get enough complaints, it gets talked about all over the place, maybe they'll take their customers seriously.
They have to go and they're going to have to put more equipment or mm-hmm. repeaters or, you know, they're not going to build another central office. So, you know, the problem is that the technology itself isn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously now at this point, why do they want to invest money in DSL when they're trying to push Fios?
Right,
and
exactly.
All that? I mean,
yeah.
Business-wise, I don't think it makes sense for them to fix these problems because what is one subscriber to them? Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. All right. 212-209-2900. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. Good evening. Yes. I tuned in kind of late, and I don't know what the question was, but I heard some reference to IHOP. Was there a question about the location of it?
Yeah, we found the location for it. But I made the mistake of questioning whether there was an IHOP in Manhattan. I've been corrected several times now. People have been coming into the station with pieces of paper showing me where it is. And it's, okay, I know now there are IHOPs in Manhattan, or at least one anyway.
Even all over the Bronx.
All over the Bronx. Doing. Okay. Well, you know, this is how you learn. You go on the radio, you make a fool of yourself, and people correct you. That's a whole teaching method there.
This is why it's an international house of pancakes.
International.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Yeah. There's a question I wanted to ask.
Go ahead.
Also, may seem like a crazy question, but I'm kind of computer illiterate, but using a thumb drive, is there some do's and don'ts about using thumb drives?
Do's and don'ts about using thumb drives. Red Hack?
You probably want to make sure that after you write things to it, that you eject it somehow. It depends on what, you know, operating system you're using, but generally that just has the computer make sure that the thumb drive is in a good state to be removed so that it won't lose any data or anything. Mm-hmm. That's my only recommendation.
Is there anywhere I can go to get information about how to use one? Would anybody know?
The internet? Yeah, or the personal computer.
Yeah, they're on right after us. They're on after us. Rob.
Yeah, and if you're planning on using it at work at all, make sure you're familiar with your company's policies on such things, because it is really bad news in some places and okay mm-hmm. in others.
All right, let's move on. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on. Oh, dear. Didn't wait long enough. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it is. Well, make the most of it. What's up? What's on your mind?
I just came back from L.A. 2 weeks ago, and when I went to the TSA checkpoint, they, like, swiped my ticket and my driver's license. Do you know what that is? It was like a blue box with a Lucite top and a little window, like a scanner in a supermarket.
Bernie, any ideas?
I didn't quite hear his description really well, but maybe he could expand on that a little bit.
I didn't see what the TSI guy did because I handed him my ticket and was talking to someone. I handed my ticket and my driver's license to the TSA guy, and he scanned the ticket and I believe my driver's license as well over a little window that looks like the laser scanner for barcodes at the supermarket. And I know there's a barcode on the ticket, but there's nothing on my license that would give him that information.
And then you were detained or questioned as a result of that?
No. I just went through, but he was doing it to everybody.
What kind of license? What state do you have your license from?
New York.
Yeah, actually, I mean, on the back of your license, there are two barcodes.
You're right.
There's a barcode. The top barcode, the regular looking barcode, is actually just your birth date, and that's used for hand scanners at places like liquor stores and clubs. And the bottom one is a 2D barcode that actually has all the information on the driver's license encoded in this kind of very dense barcode format. So actually, there is a lot of information in computer readable format on your driver's license.
I don't recall them ever doing that before. That's interesting. You know, I've seen.
Do you know how prevalent this is?
I wouldn't know. I mean, the thing about it is I don't think that all state licenses have the barcodes on it, but at least the New York State one does.
And it's a domestic flight, obviously, so it's, you know, what if you don't have a license, Mike?
Well, it sounds like a great reason not to go to L.A.
Well, I don't think L.A. is to blame.
I think when he was coming back.
This is in L.A., you said, right?
Yeah. LAX,
yeah. Oh.
Yeah, but it's probably a TSA policy of some sort in certain airports. All right, anyway, we're going to move on. Thanks for that call, and stick another one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I wonder whether you could explain a strange quirk of technology.
That's what we live for.
When changing television channels, on some of the channels, I get a brief glimpse of the new channel, and then it goes off for a couple of seconds before going back on. You can even change from the channel in HD to the same channel, not in HD, and there'll be a couple seconds of blankness between either way.
Yeah, it's some kind of, digital delay, Red Hat?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, I don't know what kind of system you have, but probably it's buffering the channel or something. So it's, you know, maybe reading ahead a little bit so that it can keep the picture steady in case there's a drop in the signal. That would be my guess.
Do you remember the good old days when you used to be able to turn a channel and immediately you'd get a picture? You know, now you have to wait.
But it might not be so high definition.
Yeah, but even just digital cable, you switch to a different channel, and it takes 2 or 3 seconds for you to actually get a picture. It's, you know, I wonder if the day is ever going to come where you can just simply switch as quickly as you used to be able to.
You know, it probably has, I mean, I know that these codecs and stuff have error-correcting things built in, so there's probably some amount of data that it has to read before it can actually display, you know, the next frames.
But I've noticed that if it's one of these things like on-demand, if you keep on pressing buttons to go down to and select the thing that you want, knowing where it is, that you can do it while the screen is blank, and it will still respond just as if it had been on all along. So apparently, even though I'm not seeing the screen, the screen is keeping up with me.
I think
it's possible as well that it is just simply remembering your key presses and applying them as soon as it can. If you think that this is like too much of a problem, you could try, you said you have a cable box?
Yeah.
You could try calling the cable company and seeing if yours is defective. If you, but as people have said, the technology is just doesn't work as well as it used to.
Yeah, and maybe one day it'll work that well again. We'll see. Hopefully, progress will eventually catch up to our demands. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, wow. Thank you for taking my call so quickly. Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York. How you guys doing?
You're not going to tell us where another International House of Pancakes is, are you?
Oh, I wanted to talk about neat things like landlines with cords.
Okay. Landlines with cords. Where? I remember those. I remember that. That's not my imagination. See, I told you.
Wait. I ran into somebody who's a big IT person with one of the banking companies who said, oh, yeah, I used to listen to 2600.
Haha.
Anyway,
interesting.
Is there any place where I can look to get really good landline phones?
Really good landline phones.
The device?
I'm talking on one of those things right now. I'm not supposed to do. I'm sorry. I'm talking on a cordless right now, and I really would like to keep my brain for another couple of years.
Yeah. Well, we don't know what the effects are going to be, and for another generation. So, but Rob, I think you have some advice.
Yeah. If you want to get a really good landline phone, my advice is hit thrift stores, secondhand shops, and garage sales because they really don't make them like they used to. The ones you're buying brand new in the store now are junk.
Yeah. You can find old Western Electric phones that you know you could kill somebody with them. Not that you should do that, but I'm saying knock him over the head with a receiver. They're really some of them made out of metal. Some most of them are plastic. But
I have some of those.
Yeah, the really old ones are metal.
Is there anybody who collects or getting? I was thinking about getting a hold of the Pioneers, the Verizon old timers group, but
the Telephone Pioneers of America is one organization. But if you just you could put something on Craigslist, say what you're looking for. But I think Rob's suggestion, just going to yard sales and garage sales, is really good.
Internet auctions. If you have a specific model in mind, you could search eBay. Yeah. If you want to be really stylish, you could buy a payphone off of eBay and hang that on your wall. Use that.
Yeah, absolutely. All kinds of possibilities, all kinds of suggestions. Folks, we're out of time. But I want to thank everybody for calling in. We took a lot of phone calls. We had to make up for lost time. OTH at 2600.com if you want to write to us, ask us any kind of other question or follow up on any other issue. And, of course, we'll be back again next week with another exciting edition of Off the Hook. This is Neil Young's computer song, I believe. Right, Rob? Yeah. All right. See you next time. Good night.